I think people more and more want to know, you know, why do we have to have these regime change wars? And I think the man who can answer that question, it might be on the line, is Zafar Benkash. Are you there, Zafar?
Yes. Hello, Phil. I am, yes.
Zafar, well, we have to start with the tragic story, I guess. We I don't know, tragic, outrageous. An attack took place last night in Quebec, outside Quebec City, on a mosque.
Yes.
I think the death toll is 7 or 8 people, with many others wounded. A man is in custody, and a second person has been identified as a witness. But there have been threats against this mosque going back. There was a – now we're all hearing the story of the pig's head put on the doorstep of that mosque a year ago, I think.
Tell
us your thoughts. What's your reaction to this story?
Well, obviously, it's not only a very tragic but horrific act that has occurred. For the first time in Canada's history, a place of worship has been attacked in this manner, in which there have been so many casualties. Among the dead are actually a university professor and a number of other people, as I was trying to catch up with all the latest news. And 19 people were injured, of whom 5 are believed to be in critical or serious condition, and they are still in hospitals, or different hospitals in Quebec City. As you mentioned, this particular center, Islamic center, was targeted last July as well, when a pig's head was left outside with a note, bon appétit. And of course, your listeners would know that Muslims do not eat pork or pig, and so this was a deliberate act of provocation and insult. According to the information that the police have released, they say that one man has been taken into custody. His name is Alexander Bissonnette. He, in fact, himself called the police, and he was arrested on a bridge leading from Quebec City into Orleans Island. And so, and the other person that was initially accused of being the second suspect has now, the police have confirmed that he is not a suspect. His name is Mohamed Khizr, a Moroccan. In fact, he is a witness to the shooting, so they are not treating him as a suspect. He apparently happened to be there, and he saw this attacker, and so he has provided some information. I want to add that there have been other incidents as well. In December of 2015, a mosque in Peterborough was firebombed and completely destroyed. Luckily, there were no casualties at that time, because there was nobody inside the mosque. There have been several attacks in Hamilton at various mosques. So it seems to me that there is a pattern to these things. And we obviously need to look into the reasons and the causes of these attacks. I believe in the case of Quebec, I would hold both the Parti Québécois for its policies, particularly the 2014 Quebec, you know, values, etc., that they were peddling, and all kinds of other racist comments that they were making. And the other contributory factor, obviously, has been the policies that Stephen Harper pursued. He was extremely antagonistic towards Muslims. He hurled gratuitous insults against the Muslims. Luckily, he's no longer in power, but I'm afraid his policies have contributed to this atmosphere of hatred and fear-mongering and divisions. And, of course, now we have Donald Trump south of the border playing on similar fears and similar divisions, and so all of these factors definitely have contributed to these attacks. Of course, you know, Muslims in the United States are facing much greater threats. There have been, in fact, the same day, on Sunday, as there was an attack in Quebec City. There was an attack on a mosque in Texas.
They burned it down, didn't they?
Yes, absolutely. And last month, in fact, one person was killed outside a mosque in Houston, Texas. He was shot dead. So there have been a number of incidents in the U.S. As compared to Canada, but I don't think that we can be complacent and assume that everything is okay over here.
No.
When we have racist politicians that spew hatred.
But also this ambivalence and cynicism that we see, and I was just talking to Ann Garrison about this, you know, we have the some who are louder and uglier than others, but then we have the enabling style guys. For example, you mentioned Harper, but many Canadians thought, well, okay, now just Justin's come in, and so we won't be selling those weapons to Saudi Arabia to bomb Yemen. But it turned into, not only did they say, yes, we're going to do it, but they defend themselves. And, you know, on unstable minds, that kind of conduct also contributes to their acting out.
Absolutely. You see, I'm glad that you mentioned Saudi Arabia. It's one of the most despicable regimes in the world. You know, they perpetrate horrific crimes against their own people, and they spew this hate-filled ideology.
And it's highly intolerant.
Absolutely.
Unlike almost all these other states that we talk about being, they call them Muslim states, but in the case of Saudi Arabia, they are really hard-nosed in their treatment of people not members of their group.
Absolutely. I mean, and they don't discriminate between Muslims and non-Muslims. Not that they should, but the fact is that they, as you said, anybody who does not agree with their narrow-minded, literalist interpretations of religion, they consider to be an enemy and therefore legitimate targets for killing. There is absolutely no such thing in Islam that allows for the killing of people with whom you disagree, either on religious or political grounds. But unfortunately, in Saudi Arabia, that is the kind of mindset that operates. And yet, you know, governments around the world, including our own, selling $15 billion worth of weapons to them. The U.S., Barack Obama, before he left office, he had signed another agreement with the Saudis for $61 billion. The Spanish government, a couple of weeks ago, signed another deal worth, I believe, $1.1 billion that they were going to supply ships to. The French have signed $12 billion worth of armament supplies. Similarly, the British and so on. So we see that.
By the way, that's a run on the treasury of Saudi Arabia. The people of Saudi Arabia don't get anything for that except a stack of weapons.
Exactly.
Their money is being spent, which could go to them.
Right.
And instead it's being U.S. dollared back to America.
Yes. And
it's like a con game.
Absolutely.
A hustle.
The Saudi economists themselves have reported that poverty levels in Saudi Arabia range between 30% to 50%. Now, in a country that is awash with oil, they have something like $750 billion in reserves, and all of this money is basically put in banks in the U.S. or in Britain, and and being spent on purchasing weapons that are then used, number one, to supply these weapons to these terrorist groups rampaging through Syria and Iraq. And since March of 2015, these weapons have been used indiscriminately against the people of Yemen, the poorest country in the Middle East, where they have killed more than 11,000 people, according to UN estimates. Mm-hmm. And they have, in fact, within the first month, anything that was considered to be a target of military interest was destroyed within the first month. And since that time, the Saudis have been bombing schools and hospitals and factories. In fact, some hospitals have been bombed 5 times. Mm-hmm. Schools have been bombed 3 to 4 times. Factories, in November, in fact, there was a October, actually, there was a funeral ceremony taking place, and the Saudis fired 9 missiles at that building, and then they said, oh, we made a mistake. You don't make a mistake by firing 9 missiles at a building when you know perfectly well that there is a funeral ceremony taking place. And the reason why they targeted that particular building was because the father of one of the ministers in the Yemeni government had died, and obviously the Saudis expected that there would be a lot of officials there, and they wanted to kill them. And so, of course, they managed to kill the mayor of Sana'a, which is the capital city of Yemen, and a number of other officials were killed. But more than 140 people were slaughtered.
And they're following U.S. Pentagon logic that if it's a high-value target, it's worth it.
Yes, exactly.
They do that kind of math, in my understanding. And when Obama was doing the drones decisions, they said if there was collateral damage, they would estimate how many people and was it worth it. And if it was a high-value target, so kill 100 people to get one.
That's correct.
I mean, we're talking about extremely wicked reasoning at this point. It's amazing that this is not called out, but there were very few civilized people elected to parliaments and congresses anymore.
Right.
They all have this disease of use of force. Incidentally, there is news there, and maybe I don't know if you have any additional information, but an American special forces guy was killed apparently in Yemen.
Correct.
And there is talk of the Yemenis firing on a Western military vessel.
Yes.
This could very quickly turn, and the Pentagon could be telling Mr. Trump what he must do, because when they lose a vessel, they expect to take matters into their own hands.
Yes. In fact, this was 2 days ago. Trump authorized an attack in Yemen, and the U.S. government said that about 11 people were killed, and they said these were all Al-Qaeda terrorists. But the reports that have emerged from Yemen, they say that 57 people were killed, including an 8-year-old girl. And this 8-year-old girl actually happened to be the daughter of Anwar al-Awlaki, who was killed by the U.S. in a drone attack 5-6 years ago. He was an American citizen.
Yes.
He was in Yemen of Yemeni origin. And then a few days later, his son, 16-year-old son, was killed. And now his 8-year-old daughter was murdered in this attack. And, of course, there were no terrorists involved there. These are all civilians, including, as I mentioned, the 8-year-old daughter of that Sheikh Anwar al-Awlaki. So this is what Trump's contribution is to the so-called war on terror.
Yes, he's the one who said we don't want foreign wars. We want to stop these wars. And then he does exactly what the others were doing.
Yes.
That's the part that has to be profoundly discouraging for anybody who thinks, oh, well, let's try the crazy man. Well, it turns out he's kind of like the other crazy men. I want to ask you about developments in Syria and link it to actually to violence against Muslims and other matters. That this continuing passion for regime change or arming so-called moderate opposition or opposition, isn't that the main contributor to the crisis we're experiencing here on our board when people talk about refugees and all that?
Absolutely. You see, this whole notion that somehow the U.S. or NATO has the license to go on this campaign of regime change and that they can install people that they like and therefore they're going to arm forces that they refer to as moderate rebels or moderate opposition. First of all, there is no such thing as moderate rebels in Syria. There is ample proof that the weapons that the U.S., Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Qatar, etc., have been supplying to these rebels, they all end up in the hands of the terrorists, whether these are heavy weapons, vehicles, anti-aircraft guns. In fact, the Turks have also been supplying chemical weapons to these terrorists. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it seems to me that there is a deliberate policy to provide these weapons to the terrorists so that they would perpetrate those outrageous acts, and then that is used as a justification to further intervene in these countries
yes.
to achieve regime change. And
well,
that's what
Hollande, when France was attacked, Hollande the next day talked about more involvement in Syria.
Yes.
He sent a warplane, I think, just to randomly bomb something.
Yes, yes. So this is
imperialist logic.
But in terms of Syria, I think things are changing because of the massive defeat that was inflicted on the terrorists in East Aleppo. Of course, you know, they were allowed to leave from there under a sort of Russian-Turkish brokered agreement. But subsequent to that, a ceasefire was agreed upon, and when last week there was a meeting in Astana, which is the capital of Kazakhstan, there were a number of rebel commanders that participated in that meeting, and they agreed to the continuation of the ceasefire, and they're going to hold another round of talks. First of all, they were scheduled for February the 8th, but now they're going to be held at the end of February. But this is a good sign. This is a hopeful mm-hmm. sign that at least some of the terrorist groups have been separated from others. And there have been reports that these terrorist groups have started to fight among themselves.
Yes.
And I think this is the way to neutralize them, that they fight among themselves.
Yes.
And kill each other so that, you know, innocent civilians would not be killed.
That's much more efficient.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we hope that that kind of activity will continue. But because of the fact that these terrorist groups were defeated in East Aleppo, it has demoralized the terrorists, and it has, of course, boosted the morale of the Syrian army, mm-hmm. Which is now carrying out other operations in other places. So we hope that this would be a harbinger of major changes mm-hmm. in Syria.
Yeah. We're speaking to Zafar Bengash. I want to make sure that I ask you this. By the way, it's crescent-online.net. Am I right?
That is correct, yes.
And the Syrian army is approaching this magical place called Al-Bab.
Yes.
And Turkey is there somewhere nearby, and Kurds are nearby, and they haven't been able to take control. Do you think we can hope that the Syrian army will be able to capture Al-Bab, and wouldn't that be highly significant?
Oh, of course it would be highly significant, but I think at the present time the Syrian army is very thinly spread. It may be difficult for them to capture Al-Bab yet. The Turkish army, in fact, is very much more involved in there. And the Turkish government has made absolutely clear, including the president, Tayyip Erdogan, he has made clear that he would not allow the Syrian army to take control of Al-Bab because it is very close to the Turkish border. And, of course, he still wants to use that as a sort of bargaining chip against the Syrian government. Although the Turkish government has now given up their rhetoric of Bashar al-Assad must go, etc. Mm-hmm. But I think there isn't a complete change of heart. And I mm-hmm. think they're still trying to maneuver themselves in one way or another to effect that change, the same change that we talked about, the regime yeah. change, by other means or by using other pressure tactics. So mm-hmm. because of the fact that the Syrian army is so thinly spread, it still has to consolidate its position around Aleppo, and then there is Palmyra that has been taken over by the terrorists, and then there is Idlib province where these terrorists are concentrated. And so the Turkish army would have a relatively free hand in Al-Bab, and I think they probably would be able to occupy it much more easily than the Syrian army would. But this would then ultimately depend on how much influence Russia can exert to facilitate or to bring about the evacuation of the Turkish army so that Syria would be able to regain its own territory.
Yeah. Well, Zafar Bengash, crescent-online.net. Thank you very, very much. It's very enlightening. And we'll want to revisit, of course. We're going to learn more about that Quebec-Mosque matter, but we're going to need to talk to you. So we thank you very, very much.
It's my great pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. And this is the Taylor Report, CIT 89.5 FM. Remember, Tiki Mercury Clark is giving a free performance.
On Saturday night at 7 p.m. at Harbor Front Center.
Yeah. Saturday night, 7 p.m., right. Harbor Front Center. Yeah. And it's called Black...
Black in the Day.
Black in the Day. Very yes. Clever. We want to thank Charlotte and Ian. And this is Phil Taylor. Oh, by the way, write to us, taylor@ciut.fm. We'd like to hear from you. And you can find us online on the Taylor Report. What is it? Facebook/The Taylor Report. And we'll see you next week.